Many of you are mothers, and you have a very special place in spiritual life and in Krishna consciousness. And we see throughout our history, our glorious history, and particularly as we see from the Srimad Bhagavatam in the wonderful pastimes of Krishna, how important the position of mothers is. And that's something we just want to take a moment, at least, and try to recognize and explore a little bit. So I want to begin, I'll begin at the top, the topmost platform of motherhood. And who would that be? Mother Yashoda, right? So we'll start with Mother Yashoda and then go from there. So in the ninth chapter of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, of course, is the story of Damodara, the story of Mother Yashoda trying to bind Krishna with the ropes. And this is a very, very familiar story to many of you. But there's two verses where Shukadeva Goswami, sort of about two-thirds of the way through that, sort of sums up the philosophy or sums up the essence of what we can take away and learn from that. And that's verses 19 and 20. So I'm going to focus on 20 and Srila Prabhupada's purport on 20. But I want to read 19 first just to kind of, because they go together somewhat. So verse 19 was, O Maharaj Parikit, this entire universe with its great exalted demigods like Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma and Lord Indra is under the control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yet the Supreme Lord has one transcendental attribute. He comes under the control of his devotees. This was now exhibited by Krishna in this pastime. And of course, this is a pastime involving Mother Yashoda trying to tie Krishna where the rope was always too short. And finally, she's getting more and more frustrated. And then Krishna, he shows that he's in supreme control. He's controlling everything, and nothing can happen without his will. But then seeing the great effort and love of his devotees, he submits to being under the control of Mother Yashoda and allows himself to be tied up to the mortar by her. So verse 20, Nemam varincho nabho nashvirap yanga sangshraya prasadam lebere gopi yatta prapta vimuktidat. Translation, neither Brahma nor Lord Shiva nor even the goddess of fortune, who is always the better half of the Supreme Lord, can obtain from the Supreme Personality of Godhead to deliver from this material world such mercy as received by Mother Yashoda. Srila Prabhupada's purport. This is a comparative study between Mother Yashoda and other devotees of the Lord. It's stated in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi 5.142, Ekla Ishvara Krishna Ara Sabha Bricha. The only Supreme Master is Krishna, and all others are his servants. Krishna has the transcendental quality of Bricha Vashyata, becoming subordinate to his Bricha or servant. Now, although everyone is Bricha, servant, and although Krishna has the quality of becoming subordinate to his Bricha, Britya, the position of Mother Yashoda is the greatest. Lord Brahma is Bricha, a servant of Krishna, and he is Adikavi, the original creator of the universe. Tene Brahma Pida Yad Adi Kavaye. That's from first verse, right? Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the second verse, yeah. Nonetheless, even he could not obtain such mercy as Mother Yashoda. As for Lord Shiva, he is the topmost Vaishnava, Vaishnavanam Yata Shambhu. What to speak of Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, is the Lord's constant companion and service, since she always associates with his body. But even she could not get such mercy. Therefore, Maharaj Parikit was surprised, thinking, what did Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj do in their previous lives, in which they got such a great opportunity, the opportunity to be the affectionate father and mother of Krishna? So then, Shukadeva Goswami starts narrating these stories of involving Mother Yashoda to show what great devotees they were. In this verse, there are three negative pronouncements. Na, na, na. When anything is uttered three times, do it, do it, do it, for instance, one should understand this is meant to indicate great stress on the fact. In this verse, we find na lebhare, na lebhare, na lebhare, which means not other. No, what it means? It means not found, right? In other words, this kind of devotion, this love is not found in Lord Shiva, in Lord Brahma, or in Lakshmi. So, Yet Mother Yashoda is in the supermost exalted position, and thus Krishna has become completely subordinate to her. The word Vimuktidat is also significant. There are different types of liberation, such as Sayujya, Salokya, Sarupya, Shastri, and Samipya. But Vimukti means special mukti. And after liberation, one is situated on the platform of Prema Bhakti. One is said to have achieved Vimukti, special mukti. Therefore, the word na is mentioned. That exalted platform of prema is described by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, prema pumarta muhan, and Mother Yashoda naturally acts in such an exalted position in loving affairs. She is therefore a nitya-siddha devotee, an expansion of Krishna's ladini potency, his potency to enjoy transcendental bliss through expansions. So in this chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and many other places as well, we see examples of this pure love of Mother Yashoda. And it's said that this pure love is a very special prema, special liberation called Vimukti. And it's special because it's the highest love that can be experienced. In other words, one can become liberated in this material world, being free from material designations, know that one is not the body, that I am spirit soul, and one might even attain realization of Brahman. So that's a type of liberation. But that is considered almost insignificant compared to this type of liberation, which involves pure love for Krishna and loving relationship with Krishna. So the pure love of Mother Yashoda, it says, it's not found in exalted personalities like Brahma, Shiva, or Lakshmi. Shiva's the greatest devotee. Lord Brahma's the creator of the universe. Lord Shiva's the destroyer of the universe. Lakshmi's the constant companion, often alongside of Lord Narayan in the deity form as well throughout many parts of India. But none of them compare to the love of Mother Yashoda. And this verse we're reading today is quoted many, many times by our acharyas. I was noticing that reading that Jiva Goswami quotes it all the time. It seems like it's a very, very dear verse to them because it shows the nature of pure loving service and how exalted this can be in devotees. And it's particularly interesting that this is a special feature of a mother's love. This is a very, very advanced stage, happens to be exemplified by a mother. Why is that? Because a mother's love is unconditional, right? It is without exchange. It is without thought of reciprocation, without thought of reward. Oh, if I take care of this baby, let's see, what will I get out of this? Mothers, do any of you think that way? If you do, you're really in for a rude surprise. Because it is. It's selfless. And you know, of course, you get all sorts of intangible things from it. Obviously, there's, you know, love, relationship, affection, all that's there. You know, but often reciprocation isn't there, right? I mean, sometimes children are what we call ungrateful, or at least the parents think they are. The children might actually be grateful, but they don't express it very much, or they don't show it very much, you know. But here, in the spiritual world, we see something very different, where there's this wonderful, equal, loving exchange, this reciprocation between Krishna and his pure devotees. You know, Mother Yashoda is constantly thinking of Krishna's welfare. That's all she's concerned about. What will happen to Krishna? She doesn't even like him going out in the pasture grounds because he might get hurt and there's demons out there. And the boys come back with these terrible stories of Trinavarta, or not Trinavarta, that was in her house, but these stories of Palumbasura or so many demons like this. And oh my gosh, and Krishna might be hungry and his feet might be hurt and on the hard ground. And you know, and she just, and if he's 5 minutes late coming back, she's out there watching for him and looking for him, constantly just thinking of him and his welfare. And how can she serve him to the utmost? And therefore, she's experiencing the highest transcendental ecstasy. It's not like, well, she's just an anxious person. No, this is ecstatic emotion. She's experiencing Krishna prema. And one of the features of Krishna prema is that it is a reciprocal experience of the devotee's love for Krishna and Krishna's love for his devotee. And therefore, because Krishna is so grateful, actually, for the love of this, for the love that the devotee offers him and everything the devotee offers to him, that he says, I have to give myself to such a devotee. Whatever the devotee wants, I have to give. In other words, he is giving of himself just as completely, if not more so, than the devotee is giving to him. And this is the wonderful feature of spiritual relationships. We don't see this in the material world much. You know, there's usually some exchange, or somebody gets the better of it, one person gets more out of a relationship than another. Not so with Krishna. So the mother loves and serves the child without expectation of reward. And we see that even in the material world, this holds true to a certain degree. A mother will even give her life to save her child. Someone was just telling me a recent story, I guess it just happened, and I didn't really see it, so this is secondhand, I might not have the details right. But basically, the long story short is, a woman was shipwrecked or something, or coming from Cuba, wherever it was, and she's in the lifeboat or the raft with two little children, right? And one's a baby and the other's just a little bit older, and she's nursing still, and so they have no water. So she breastfeeds, nurses both of the children, depleting her own bodily, you know, liquids and resources, so she dies. You know, but one of the children lived because of that. So she basically gave up her life to save her child. And that is the epitome of this love that a mother will have. So we see this, and Srila Prabhupada said that this love is often the highest and purest, even the material world. In fact, he said it's sort of a model or an example that we can think of. When you think, well, how does the pure devotee, how do we think of Krishna, how do we love Krishna, he said it is like the love of a mother and child, like this. In fact, he even said when we're chanting Hare Krishna, one of his famous speeches, I think it's on one of those records, you know, that when we chant Hare Krishna, we should be calling out just like a mother, like a child calls out for its mother, that kind of relationship. And because the child is totally dependent on the mother and totally trusting, the mother will take care of me. At least it used to be that way. I don't know. It's Kali Yuga. Things aren't always like that. But at least ideally, you know, it generally was the fact, you know, that your parents you counted on. They take care of you. You know, they would do what they had to do for you. And you know, hopefully you do something for them someday. But anyway, Srila Prabhupada says, these are very exalted spiritual understandings in Krishna consciousness. They're not fictional, imaginary, or concocted. They are facts. And every devotee can have the privilege to understand and indeed take part in Krishna's pastimes if he is spiritually advanced. We should not think that the privilege given to Mother Yashoda is not available to us. Everyone can have a similar privilege. If one loves Krishna as one's child, then one will have such a privilege. And here's an interesting thing he says now. Because the mother has the most love for the child. Even in this material world, there's no comparison to a mother's love, for a mother loves her child without any expectation of return. That's from Teachings of Queen Kunti, chapter 14. So Prabhupada emphasized this more than once. So the selfless love, giving to oneself, is characterized by the relationship of the mother and child, is really the essence of spiritual life. So it's not just limited to Mother Yashoda. It's actually the essence of spiritual life. That one gives everything to the Lord, and the Lord reciprocates in kind. Now, besides Mother Yashoda, of course, there have been so many great devotees throughout our history. The Srimad Bhagavatam has many, many stories of great exalted men and women throughout its pages. And I was just thinking of some of the women who were great, great devotees and exemplars, but were also had a role as mothers, which I thought was kind of interesting. First of all, we were talking about Queen Kunti. She was the mother of the five Pandava brothers, so that's what she was very well known as. But yet, in the Bhagavatam, her prayers, which actually Prabhupada's lectures on those prayers were compiled in her book, Teachings of Queen Kunti, are some of the most exalted examples of pure surrender to Krishna. So she is speaking some of the highest truths, some of the highest examples of how one feels when one is truly surrendered to Krishna. And of course, probably her most famous verse, which I don't know by heart, but is the one that, you know, she talked about all the calamities and how Krishna saved them. And she said, may these calamities come again and again, because through those calamities, I see Krishna, and Krishna is with us. So let them come as long as I'm able to be with Krishna during those times. That's great surrender. How many of you daily ask for Krishna for some calamity to come upon you? Not so much, right? No, it's a very, very high advanced position. Then there's Devahuti. Devahuti was the mother of Kapila Dev. Now, did he just think, okay, well, that's nice, she was my mother? No. Lord Kapila taught Sankhya philosophy in the third canto? Help me out here. Third canto. To whom? His mother, Devahuti. Right? He, in other words, this is very, what to say? It's sometimes difficult. It's, you know, tough philosophy. It's not just like stories and pastimes. You know, it's like Sankhya Yoga is the breakdown of how everything works, the material energy, the spiritual energy, quite complex. And he speaks it to his mother, Devahuti. Another one I thought was very interesting is, many of you probably know or have read Brihadbhagavatamrita, written, it's the great opus of Sanatana Goswami. Wonderful, wonderful book, if you haven't read it. BBT published it. It was one of Gopi Puranadana's later or last, one of his last works that he translated. Anyway, who first spoke it? I mean, Sanatana Goswami wrote and is telling his story, but you know, it's always a story. This one said to this, this one said to this. You know how they go through about five levels of, you know, conversation. It was originally spoken by King Parikshit. After he hears Srimad Bhagavatam, 7 days, he's on his probably his last day waiting for the snake bird to come and kill him. His mother comes to him, Uttara. And what does he do? And what does she ask him? Does she get all sentimental and everything? She says, no. Please relate to me the essence of what you learned from Shukadeva Goswami. And he said, okay. He says, normally I would be silent this time, but since you asked this wonderful thing, I will. And so he speaks Brihadbhagavatamrita, which is what, about 2,000 pages, you know, right? To his mother, Uttara. I mean, this is fantastic. You know, these relationships that the devotees have. You know, it's not like, oh, she's just my mother, you know, in this lifetime, now I'm going back to Krishna. No. Great care. We have the example of Sunita, mother of Dhruva Maharaj. She first instructed him to go to the forest to meditate, right? He meets Narada Muni. Narada Muni becomes his Diksha Guru, explains to him, sets him going on his spiritual life. He becomes, of course, self-realized. He kills off a bunch of yakshas and does a few other things, goes back onto the throne. Eventually, then, it's time for him to leave. He's going back to Godhead. The big flower airplane comes. He gets on it. They're all there, Nanda Sananda, the whole retinue, ready to take him back to Vaikuntha. He says, wait, I'm not going without my mother. Where's my mother? And they say, oh, don't worry about it. See, she's on another airplane. She's going with us, right ahead of us. So he says, okay, fine. He thought of his mother. And why? And not only because it was his mother and he was some sentimental or something, because Prabhupada says she was his Padarshana Guru, the one who set him on the path. She first told him, become renounced, go to the forest, you know. In other words, don't just be angry, you know, become self-realized. And so he had this greatest respect for her. And Prabhupada said she's also considered his Siksha Guru. Okay. Now, of course, in Krishna's pastimes in the 10th canto, women have so many prominent positions. It's really interesting. Besides, many of them are mothers, but you have, besides Mother Yashoda, and others in the Vatsalya Rasa, like Mother Rohini, they were almost considered equal. Rohini and Yashoda are best friends. They live together. They're Balaram and Krishna's mothers. They raise them together, really, and they think equally of both of them. And you have so many, and then you've got all the other neighbors and everything, and you know, so many in that Rasa, with Vatsalya Rasa. Of course, the gopis, that's almost a whole other topic. The exalted position of the gopis is unparalleled. They're considered to be the absolute epitome of surrender to Krishna, who only think of Krishna 24 hours a day. Thank you. So you have the queens in Dwarka, similarly. And others are even given prominence. I was just reading the story of Kaliya, the subduing of Kaliya, and I'd forgotten that after he does it all and the Nagapatnis, his wives, come, these are like the wives of a big snake demon, right? Well, so, you know, what would you think they'd be like? Well, they end up speaking about 20 verses of deep, wonderful philosophy. They're fully self-realized, full devotees of Krishna, surrender to him. They're great devotees. Then later I was reading again about the wives of the Brahmins. And this was a really interesting story. Because these Brahmins were, you know, big learned Brahmins. They knew all the mantras. They knew all the sacrifices. They could probably chant, you know, like they said, who was that about Keshava Kashmiri? He could chant verses like the blowing of the wind. So they were like that, right? You know, these big Vedic scholars. But they did not recognize Krishna. So Krishna told sort of by pretext, he makes the coward boys feel hungry. They said, Krishna, we're hungry. Give us something to eat. You know, they just depended on him for everything. Krishna says, well, go ask the Brahmins. They're doing a big sacrifice, and they have a lot of prasadam. They're, you know, oh, okay. And he said, ask on behalf of Balaram. I'm not quite sure why that was. Maybe because he was a son of a Kshatriya, and they might respect him more, something like that. Anyway, they do, and they kind of brush them off, totally blew them off, as they say. You know, didn't even speak to them hardly, just like, you know, just leave us alone, you know. So they came back all disappointed. Krishna said, okay, don't worry about it. Go ask the wives of the Brahmins. Tell them Krishna and Balaram are here. So he goes back and tells them. They go back and tell, and the wives, of course, they're just totally excited. We can get to see Krishna. They had heard about Krishna, and they developed love for Krishna by hearing about him, but they hadn't ever really had a chance to be face-to-face associating with him. So they thought this was a wonderful opportunity, and I guess either the boys reminded them, well, by the way, we're also hungry or whatever. But anyway, they brought all of this prasadam, kettles and kettles, you know, with them, and so everyone could eat sumptuously, and of course, Krishna, you know, blessed them and gave them such satisfaction. It's described that just them seeing, taking Krishna in with their eyes, they had the greatest ecstasy and felt completely satisfied. You know, so then the point was, you know, in fact, before that, I forgot a point, their husbands tried to stop them. They forcefully tried to restrain them. No, what are you doing? You can't go off to see these cowards. And they did anyway. They said, we don't care. We're going to see Krishna. We don't care what you say. Now, this is quite a breach of etiquette. These are nice, chaste Brahmin ladies, and they're telling their husbands, forget it, we're going to go see Krishna. Well, we don't care what you say, because their love is that strong. And so Krishna so much appreciated that. Now, of course, they wanted to stay with him, but he said, you can't really do that. You got to go back, and like that. And anyway, when they went back, and they were in such ecstasy that somehow, and they said, well, our husband won't even accept us. They'll probably throw us out. And he said, no, they won't. It'll be okay. You see. And it was. Somehow he changed their hearts, and they saw how one ecstatically filled with prema their wives were, how advanced they were, and they immediately realized, oh, what have we done? We are stupid. I mean, they even were saying, you know, to hell with all this learning. It's right in Bhagavatam. It said this, to hell with this, to hell with our advancement, our knowledge, everything, you know. And so they felt very much ashamed. You know, but they still didn't go to see Krishna because they were afraid of Kamsa. So even though they came around and they understood, they came to their senses, realized that Krishna was God, they did not have the faith, you know, to just give up everything, and even just to go see him like their wives did. So this was a great example of how the wives were much more advanced, not because they knew scripture, not because they knew shlokas, not because they knew sacrifice, but because they had love of Krishna deep in their heart. And I remember reading Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary on that chapter, and he says, after that point, the Brahmins accepted their wives as their gurus, as their spiritual masters, you know, because they were more advanced. Simple as that. So anyway, we have so many, there's one more I want to talk about. Purnamasi. Now, you probably know that Krishna performs all of this lila and all of these intricate pastimes in Vrindavan, but he doesn't want to engineer them all. He can, of course. He's in control of everything in the whole universe, spiritual, material worlds. But what fun is it if he's got it all planned out, tells everyone what they're going to say, what they're going to do, knows what they're going to do? You know, what's the enjoyment there? Krishna likes variety. Krishna likes rasa. Krishna likes relationship. And he likes a little excitement. You know, he has so many varieties of relationships like this. So he has his internal potency, his yoga maya, Shakti, who is, I guess you'd say, personified as Mother Purnamasi in Vrindavan. Purnamasi is an old lady. She's gray-haired Brahmin lady in Vrindavan. She lives along the bank, on a little hut on the banks of Yamuna. And she orchestrates all of this happening, tells the gopis, go here, go over here, you'll see Krishna this way, and do this and do that. And sometimes even surprises Krishna about what's going to happen. He wants to be surprised. He said, you know, surprise. Sometimes he thinks to himself, I wonder if Purnamasi, how she's going to solve this one, how she's going to work this problem out. So, you know, he kind of leaves it there. And she's ably assisted by people like Vrinda. Jiva Goswami explains that, you know, Vrinda, as in Vrindavan, you know, it's Vrinda's forest, Vrinda's Vana, that she is actually the personification of the Leela Shakti of Vrindavan. So she helps make everything that happens in Vrindavan, the Vrindavan forest, you know, she prepares everything there for Radha and Krishna, the groves and everything, and the bowers. And so she's helping her too, and some others. And she is actually considered by the Vrajavasis like their guru. She's not only is she respected, she's like absolutely obeyed. I mean, whatever she says, that's it. That is fact. You know, she was also a disciple of Narada Muni's, and they had the greatest respect for Narada Muni, so that helped. Oh, she's Narada Muni's disciple. I mean, And interesting enough, Purnamasi, you know, you think she's just in a sort of really detached position, you know. She was a mother herself. Anyone know who one of her children was? Who? I can't hear. Sandipani Muni, yes. Krishna's guru, Sandipani Muni, was her son. And her grandchildren, who's Sandipani Muni, say it three times fast. who was his son? Madhu Mangal. So Madhu Mangal is, and he also helps her out. He's kind of a confidant of Krishna, so he's helping out too with the pastimes, you know, and going kind of an in-between. And then she has a daughter named Gangi, was it? Nandini Mukhi. She has another, sometimes it's called Gargi too, I think. Anyway, and she's also kind of part of the pastime. So, I mean, this is like, you know, she's a mother, she's a grandmother, she's got this incredible family, and she's Yoga Maya. No. Anyway, this is the nature of the spiritual world. It's personal, it's relationships, and these wonderful family relationships are all there. So, one thing I was thinking is that I'm going to go back to Dhruva for a minute. I'm switching gears here, you know, don't get confused. Dhruva's recognized his mother as his formative influence that led him on the path of spiritual life. And this is not really unusual. When you think about it, most children learn first from their mother, don't they? Who is the most prominent person in all of our lives for the first few years? Usually it's our mother. Not always, sometimes a grandmother, somebody, maybe some people raised by a father, but you know, I'd say probably in most cases, majority of cases, it's the mother. So the mother has this very influential position. In fact, there's even many psychological theories, like an attachment theory. They talk about how one's early emotional bonding, like what they call it, secure attachment or insecure attachment, has great effect on one's later life. That they have, you know, that you have a relationship, a loving, trusting relationship. The concept is, if you have this trusting relationship with your mother and your caregivers, you tend to have a trusting relationship towards others and to the world. And if you don't, then sometimes that gets a little dicey. So anyway, it's very important that children are cared for nicely, because the way that they're raised in those early years has so much to do with how they are going to feel, act, behave in later life, not just materially if they're happy, but spiritually. And that's, I think, what we're concerned about. So Srila Prabhupada was always very concerned that the children were cared for nicely. I mean, this is something, you can see all kinds of letters we talked about this. Like, here's a conversation with Prabhupada, and Tamal Krishna's asking, saying some things. Prabhupada says, so many children are coming, very fortunate children, but in the beginning in Krishna consciousness, we, meaning himself, had the chance of taking birth from such a father and mother. So all these children should be taken care of very nicely. They will be an asset for our movement. Tamal Krishna says, the future hope. I say, oh yes. Therefore, I want you to organize Gurukula very nicely, which they didn't. We have no objection. Let them, I'm sorry, I can't help editorializing. Let them produce hundreds of children. You said that your Guru Maharaj said, yes. His Bhaktisiddhanta said, if I could produce Krishna conscious children, I'm prepared to produce hundreds of children. Produce children like Prahlad Maharaj, the whole world would be benefited. Progeny, that is not condemned. Why should it be condemned? Let there be progeny, pregnancy, but Krishna conscious. Prabhupada said, very nice. They should be trained properly. Special care should be taken. And Prabhupada, of course, always gave great encouragement to all of his disciples, the men, the women, the children, everybody. And when you were around Srila Prabhupada at all, or you store, you know, you see this constantly. One story I always think about is in 1974, we went to San Francisco. Were you with us on that trip, Sukhita? To San Francisco? No, it's the next year. Yeah, anyway, I can't remember who was on that one. But anyway, we got to San Francisco, Srila Prabhupada's there in Rath Yatra. Somehow, I don't know why, my Sankirtan party always ended up in places like that, like Prabhupada and Rath Yatra in San Francisco. It was by some coincidence, you know, we would be there the same. I think I had it all planned out weeks ahead, you know. Anyway, yeah, very, very wonderful experience. And that's, you know, some of you have seen in one of those movies where Prabhupada's jumping up and down on the Rath cart. That was that year. It was really cool. And during the Bhagavatam class, they had, it was interesting in those days because all the sannyasis seemed to show up from every part of the world, wherever Srila Prabhupada was. So you had Srila Prabhupada, all the devotees, and you had about, 20 sticks in front of him, all sort of like almost the bastion guarding him or something, But, they were great devotees. But they didn't want any of the kids to make any noise, right? So some child would make a little noise and they'd say, oh, go up, leave. And my wife was there with, which one would have been? Would have been Lolita, I guess. Anyway, who was a baby. And the kid next to him started crying. It wasn't her, but they said, all right, go, you have to leave. So they go out into the hallway, and my wife's crushed. And I said, here I am to see my spiritual master, and I can't even be in the temple room and hear him give class. But of course, at the end of class, they did this, everyone knows about the cookie distribution, right? So at the end of the day, they bring Prabhupada this big tray of cookies, and Prabhupada says, bring in the children. So all the women brought their children, babies, and the big sea of sannyasis had to part, and all the women went up there, and Prabhupada would hand out the cookies to them. And I remember my daughter was, she was very, very young at that time, and she couldn't really hold the cookie very well, so Prabhupada took and put it right in her mouth with his hand. So it was like, so my mother was thrilled. My wife, the mother of my children, was, she was thrilled, she was excited, I felt, okay, it's like I got some reciprocation. I wasn't able to hear the class, but I got this, And she was most excited because her children, right? I mean, that's the way mothers are. She was excited that her child got to have this experience. And so that's the way things were. And Srila Prabhupada, was just always looking out, encouraging. I was this afternoon kind of looking for some different quotes. Find a lot that I specifically wanted, but I noticed that Prabhupada, over and over again, all these early letters, we talk about my boys and girls there. He always called his boys and girls because he was 70 and we were like 18 through 25 or whatever at the oldest, And so he says, all you boys and girls are preaching so nicely, all you boys and girls. It was always the boys and girls. In like every letter he was saying boys and girls. There was no distinction to Prabhupada. In fact, Prabhupada once said that these girls are his secret weapon because they were so successful in bringing people to Krishna consciousness. Then he kind of laughingly said, well, if we didn't have any girls here, none of the boys would come and join. that's funny. But he was like that. He often spoke proudly about the six young men and women, the three couples that went to London, Malati and Shamasundar and Mukunda and Janabi. And Guru Das and Yamuna, right? Anyway, let's say, Prabhupada was so proud of them going to lunch. They were successful. They started temple. They met the Beatles, got a number one hit song of the Hare Krishna mantra. Did so much really great stuff. And he'd always talk about these boys and girls, these men and women, they were all married, that they went together. He didn't say, these men and their wives are also assisting. It was the six of them, equal footing. And so this is what it was like. And this is spiritual life. Spiritual life does not make a lot of bodily distinctions. I mean, we do to some degree just because of the difficulties being in this material world, sex desire, and things like that. So we have to make some accommodation for that. But the essence is, is the spiritual, the Atma, the Jiva, the soul, which is not male or female. Well, ultimately, it's actually we're all female. It's a fact. It says it's one Purusha, Krishna, and everyone else's property. So, you know, if you really want to make a distinction, then you're all girls. Okay. Got you there. It's true. Okay. So, another story I like was, you know, Rukmini. I think of Anuttu's wife, he's my friend, but he's my best friend, one of my best friends, but she was a devotee long before any of us. She was like back there in 66 in New York. I think she joined when she was like 15 or 16 years old. And she tells this story that they were in a darshan, Srila Prabhupada, and Srila Prabhupada said, oh, you should all go out and start a temple. Every one of you should start your own temple. And Rukmini, a little 16-year-old girl, says, the girls too? And Prabhupada says, yes, why not? So, you know, she felt very enlivened by that. That was nice. Okay, so everyone was dear to Srila Prabhupada. Everyone is dear to Krishna. And interestingly, we see some of the most wonderful examples of devotees in women's bodies as well as men's bodies. So, And I think that it's also interesting that we see some of these highest relationships are in this Vatsalya Rasa, or the parental Rasa. And of course, Nanda Maharaj is a great, great devotee, the father of Krishna. And, you know, he's glorified all over the place. But Mother Yashoda seems to get more attention, doesn't she? We hear more about Mother Yashoda and her specific pastimes. There's a few with Nanda, you know, like the lizard, and when they show them Goloka, in the, you know, things that there are. But Mother Yashoda seems specially singled out as this just exemplar of pure prema, pure love for Krishna. So we're not Mother Yashoda, but Prabhupada said, and what was the thing I read, don't think that we cannot be in that position. Anyone who surrenders purely to Krishna can have that same type of relationship. You're not going to be literally Mother Yashoda, but we can all have that kind of relationship of pure prema. And so I think that this is an opportunity just to really think about the contributions of all the great Vaishnavis, both presently in our movement, and also in what everyone is doing now. And I'm glad that Mother Mukhya mentioned the seven mothers, because I had that in my notes to mention. I forgot to look it up and couldn't remember all of them. I could only come up with six. So I'm glad she said them, right? So, yeah, the cows, I mean, everything to do, these things are all precious to Krishna. And all of us are. And so I think the takeaway I would get from this is that, you know, we should honor everyone. There's Father's Day next month. We could do a class on that too, on the fathers. You know, but for now, I think that women get a little less glorification. So let's give a little equal opportunity here. And remember the wonderful women in the Srimad Bhagavatam and the wonderful women in our movement and our own mothers. My mother wasn't a devotee by any sense, but she was a nice mother. She raised me nicely. I appreciate her. You know, I respect what values she taught, and she did the best she could being ignorant of spiritual life. You know, and I was not pure enough to be able to really influence her very much before she passed away. But still, you know, we recognize even people doing their dharma, you know, is recognized and appreciated by Krishna. You know, that people are good parents, you know, that this is important. And in Kali Yuga, that's becoming not necessarily a given, right? I mean, there's a lot of not so good parents, a lot of bad parenting, abusive parents like that that are. So, you know, we want to at least have this high human civilized standard where we're caring for our children, we're caring for women, we're taking care of everyone in our society. And then hopefully a higher spiritual standard where we're helping to bring everyone to Krishna consciousness, and we're not only remembering but glorifying the contribution that everybody makes to this Krishna consciousness movement. So I think Prashadam is probably almost ready, so thank you very much. All glory to Srila Prabhupada, and happy Mother's Day. Thank you. Thank you. Good to see you. All right, let me turn this.